Ramsey TV.
Yes, that's right. That's Quaker Oatmeal in the back. That's the Quaker dude right there. I guess when they got into a religious ecstasy, they used to quake, they used to quiver, and then they used to eat rolled oats. So the oatmeal company adapted this dude right here. He's dressed a little strange. I think the women dress the same way. It's another religious cult. I don't know why people just can't act normal. Why they have to wear these crazy hats. And I'm all for the oatmeal, but these other things, I just don't know. Martin Zender here. Now let's go from talking about Quakers to Abraham. And I promise I'm going to tell my tale today. Now Abraham was a busy guy because he's called upon by Paul and upon by James. Paul and James, different gospels. Paul's gospel of faith alone. James says, no, faith alone isn't good enough. Nope, faith by itself is dead. That's what that guy said. Martin Luther got so upset at him that he said, James should be stricken from the scriptures. There's a guy, Martin Luther, who did not understand the two gospels. If he had, he wouldn't have said that. I can see why he's upset, because James seems to go against everything Paul teaches, which he does. That's the beauty of those two bins I was telling you about. So in Romans chapter 4, Paul calls upon Abraham before circumcision, James calls upon him after circumcision. What do you know? That's quite interesting because circumcision marks that line where Abraham becomes the father of the Israelites. See, because before that, he's not an Israelite. Abraham was not an Israelite. He was the grandfather of Israel. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob changed to Israel. Abraham, yeah, the grandfather. So he was not an Israelite himself. How could he be? That's right. So the Israelites came from him, but God cleverly put Abraham in a position of believing something by faith and being credited with being righteous because of it, believing something that he couldn't see, namely that his seed would be numerous, even though he didn't have a son. It sounded preposterous, ridiculous, impossible. And Abraham goes, yeah, okay, that sounds good to me. God loved that, absolutely loved it, bookmarked it, brought it to Paul's mind. Paul says, that is, wow, Paul's excited about that because he says, well, there's something I can draw upon to explain my gospel. My gospel is completely based on grace, based on faith, and just when you think I got nothing to go on, no scriptural references whatsoever, I got Abraham who believes God and it's credited to him for righteousness. So God did that so that thousands of years later, Paul could say, there it is. There was the seed. There was the Genesis. Now, after that, it got covered. It got clouded because Abraham became the father of the circumcision. He was circumcised. His household was circumcised. Now he's an Israel guy. Abraham's probably going, oh, man, I'd much rather be the guy called upon by Paul only. But no, I got hijacked by James. James calls upon my sacrificing my son Isaac like I did a work. I did a thing. James gets all excited about that. Has what we call Jamesgasm. That's what I call it. People get excited about James. Christians, I call it Jamesgasms. They love James. I worked with a nurse back in the 80s when I was an orderly at Altman Hospital in Canton, Ohio. She used to see me carrying around my NASB. This was in 1982. I had my NASB. And she was all excited that I read the Bible. And she said, have you read the book of James? Oh, James. She was so excited about James. She had Jamesgasms every time she talked about him. So what is with this James? He was justified by works. Abraham was justified by works. By works. She loved works. Christians love James because they love works. They like to prove themselves. And there he is in chapter 2. James himself, the Jamesgasm named after him. He says, now are you wanting to know, O empty human, that faith apart from works is dead? Ooh, that's a hard statement there, James, old boy, James 2:20. Well, he says, well, Abraham, our father, at this time, Abraham's turning over in his grave like, oh, God, why did I have to be used for this example? So he goes on, Abraham, our father, was he not justified by works? Was he not, says James, when offering up his son Isaac on the altar? You are observing says James. And James was purely physical, physical relation to our Lord. It's a physical relationship. Any Israelite is based on physical relationship to Abraham. Somebody made the comment on the web on my show yesterday, well, we're the seed of Abraham. I said, only in the realm of faith. It's like when we believe, we don't magically become descendants, literal descendants of Abraham. It's a figurative relationship. He's the father of us all, the father of faith. It's figurative. He's not my literal father. He's the father of faith. How can faith have a father? Does faith have a father? Does faith say, good night, father? No, it's figurative. The whole thing's figurative. Our relationship to Abraham. People see that and they go, we're Israelites. We're Israelites. They don't realize it's figurative. He's the father of faith. Good night, Abraham. Does Abraham tuck faith into bed at night?
There you go, son. Here's your teddy bear. Tuck you in the bed. I'm your father and your faith.
No, it's a figure of speech. You're observing that faith worked together with his works. Thanks, James. Verse 22. This works great for the circumcision, but not for us. Faith worked together with his works, and by works was faith perfected. See, James, faith is not enough. It's got to be perfected. I need to see faith perfected. Well, too bad you can't walk by faith, not perception, James. No, he can't. James can't walk by faith, not perception. He's got to have the James-chasm. Got to have it. And fulfilled was the scripture, which is saying, now Abraham believes God, and it is reckoned to him for righteousness. See, he brings that verse up from Paul, Romans 4. But then he says, fulfilled was the scripture, which said, now Abraham believes God, and it is reckoned to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. Not the father of faith, the friend of God. James doesn't see the faith act as a complete act in itself. It's kind of like some of these guys, they date girls and they hold their hands and they want to kiss them because they want to get them in the bed. That's all they want to do. They got to have that hold. They got to hold their hands and they get all lovey-dovey, and the girl thinks, oh, he wants to hold my hand, but really he wants to get him in bed, and to him that's the first act. I've never been that way. I think that's ridiculous. To me, like, holding hands with a woman is a complete act. It's a wonderful thing in itself. Kissing a woman, it's a complete act. It doesn't have to lead to anything else. Too bad James doesn't know that about faith. Faith is a complete act. It's a beautiful thing, and it's reckoned to Abraham as righteousness. But James, it's not good enough. James got to take it to bed. James has to go all the way. He has to have a James-gasm, or the faith didn't mean anything. Unless you take me to bed, that hand-holding meant nothing. That's what James says to Abraham. Abraham says, isn't the hand-holding enough? Isn't the kissing enough? James says, no, we got to go all the way. Unless you take me to bed and put a ring on it, it doesn't mean anything. Poor James. Feel sorry for that guy. Then the question was, I swear I'm going to get to it. You'll see. The question, now I can't. I want to deal with another question that was brought up on my YouTube channel, which is a really good question about why Peter and Paul were even friends. Well, Peter and Paul became friends, obviously, because God wanted them to become one in a new evangel. No, Peter never jumped ship into Paul's gospel. Never. It was fatal to him. Jesus told him he would be seated on one of 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Why would he jump into a gospel where there's neither Jew nor Greek, and where he would have to forsake his Israelite identity, as Paul did? No. The reason Paul and Peter got together, and the reason Peter gave Paul the right hand of fellowship, and James and John gave Paul the right hand of fellowship, was so that Paul got a leg up. Paul needed the help. He needed the support of the headquarters. He needed the support of Jerusalem. That's a figure of speech, too. Jerusalem doesn't come up to Paul, put its arm around Paul, and say, hey, Paul, I'm Jerusalem. I'll give you the right hand of fellowship. Jerusalem, meaning the chiefs, Peter, James, John. Paul would have never gotten a good start, if he didn't have the push, didn't have the, go get him, kid, from Jerusalem. That's what they said. They said, go get him, kid. Peter recognized Paul was given grace. It doesn't mean Peter understood Paul's gospel. He didn't. He just says, okay, God revealed to me with a sheet coming down. Remember, the sheet comes down, shows Peter the unclean animals, kill and eat. Peter says, far be it from me, Lord. I've never ate an unclean animal. God says, what I've declared clean, don't you declare dirty. So Peter needed that. Then he goes to Cornelius. He needed that to prepare him for Paul. Now Paul comes on the scene. Peter says he gives him grace, gives him the right hand of fellowship. Now Paul gets the attaboy from Jerusalem. It doesn't mean they're joining his evangel. It doesn't mean that at all. That's a leap to say that that ever happened. So there I was. I was invited. This is a great story. That's what I've been talking to you about, telling you this for 2 days. I'm finally going to do it. Let's just say it was 1997. So I was invited to speak at a church in Detroit, Michigan. It was a suburb of Detroit. I think it was Rochester Hills. The church was the Restoration Bible Church. It was pastored by Jory Brooks, who I just researched, and he's still active. It is an Israelite identity church. People don't realize that there are groups out there that are really focused on the circumcision gospel, and they understand the circumcision gospel. They really do. And they like to trace their identity. I went to this church. I came to this through Dean Huff. Dean Huff, of course, being the editor of Unsearchable Riches magazine. I befriended him. He befriended me back in 1993. He really helped me find people who believed similarly as I did. Loved the guy. And apparently, the one thing in common between the circumcision church called Restoration Bible Church, pastored by Jory Brooks, and an organization like the Concordant Publishing Concern, which was all about Paul, the one thing they had in common was the salvation of all. And I find this to be true, that there are circumcision groups out there, and they do exist. I listened to one for years, from like 1982 to 1990. I listened to a guy named Ray Prinzing, who was a kingdom guy. He preached the kingdom. He preached Israel. He preached forgiveness. Didn't know nothing about Paul, but he believed in the salvation of all. That's a common denominator. I don't know why. J. Preston Eby was another kingdom guy. Paul Mueller was another kingdom guy. See, my father-in-law tapped into these people, so I got wind of them, and I started to listen to them, and they informed me. I listened to their cassette tapes driving back and forth to the post office all the time. I heard Ray Prinzing going to work, coming back from work. I eventually met the guy. It was amazing. I met this great guy, Ray Prinzing. I was like, couldn't believe I was meeting him. You know how it is. So anyway, but I later found out that he didn't understand two evangels. He didn't understand the new creation. Still wrestling with the old creation, looking forward to the kingdom on earth, didn't know that we are crucified with Christ and all this. So I had to learn that from the Concordant Publishing Concern. Anyway, Dean Huff was giving talks at the Restoration Bible Church in Detroit. I'll just say Detroit. And he invited me to come up there. They got wind that I was publishing a newsletter at the time, the Idle Babbler Illustrated. And they said, we'd like to hear this guy, so bring him up. So I came to the Restoration Bible Church via Dean Huff, and I came up and I taught on various aspects of the salvation of all and the sovereignty of God. And they liked it. But see, I was aware what they were. I was aware that they were an Israelite identity group and that they were hot to trot on the law. They were James people all the way. Israel maps all over the place. Ten Commandments enshrined on every wall. They loved Israel. And I knew what it was all about. And I said, well, I'll go along with this because, you know, it gets me out of town on, I think I went there like every weekend. I was driving up to Detroit, maybe a three-hour drive. Every weekend I was going up there on a Sunday and teaching them up there in their church. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, up from Ohio, the great metropolis of Greenwich, Ohio. It's Martin Zender. You know who else was up there teaching? Stephen Jones. Many of you know Stephen E. Jones. He's another kingdom guy. He makes the whole scripture a figure of speech. Doesn't believe anything's literal, really. He just like, this is an allegory. The book of Revelation is a total allegory. He's all kind of the woo-woo spirituality where, you know, you look at it sideways and it's not really literal. You don't really need to be intellectual. You just kind of go with your gut. That's Stephen E. Jones. I'm not saying I don't respect the guy. I'm just saying that a scholar, I do not consider him to be, but he was there several times when I was teaching. So I was going up there and it came about that I was getting tired of going up there. Every Saturday, it was a long drive. I'd never slept very well before I went there because I was always running the teaching through my head, and I was very excited to go. I loved it. I loved the action. Loved the activity. I said, you know what? I think I'm going to go up there and teach on justification. apart from works of law. Ho! Yeah, I know I've told this story before. Some of you have heard this before. I have new people watching all the time, so bear with me. I'll tell it different every time. I said, you know what? I'm just going to go up there and teach on justification by faith. And I knew that it was going to make them nuts because justification, according to Paul, comes up. We're justified apart from works of law. And I knew that that one phrase, apart from works of law, would blow it up. I knew it would blow it up. And I was willing to go up there and blow it up because I was tired of the drive. And I thought, well, if I'm tired of the drive and I don't really want to come here anymore, why don't I go out with a bang? Why don't I go out with a bang? So I was a little bit nervous. I don't think I slept much that night. I drove up there, and I'm ready to lay it on them. I get up there, and of course, they're all like shaking my hand because they love me because I'm a Salvation of All guy. Little do they know that I'm also a Paul guy and that I'm about to blow up their church. They didn't know that. Until I took the podium. I believe I still have this cassette. Now, there's a guy named Rodney Paris in Texas who is now taking all my old cassettes from like 1993 through 2000, and he's digitizing them. And so this talk I gave in Detroit at the Restoration Bible Church, and Jory Brooks loved me up until this day. He would take me out to lunch afterwards. What do you want, Zender? You want a big juicy steak? You couldn't eat pork because they were Israelites. You couldn't eat shellfish, no shrimp. Forget about it. Crabs, forget about it. Oysters, no. Bacon, forget about it. But big juicy steak, sure. As long as all the blood's out of it. So I commenced on my talk. I cleared my throat. And, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to talk to you today about the difference between forgiveness and justification. I said forgiveness has to do with breaking the law of Moses, as everyone does, and they all nodded, yes, but being let off the penalty, being let off, i.e. forgiveness. Yes, of course. Then I said, but there's another more spectacular thing in the scriptures. And you only find it in Paul's writing, and it's called justification. And it comes to us apart from works of law. You could have heard a pin drop. You could have heard the beads of sweat that were forming on my forehead drop. And they did drop onto the podium. I began to perspire because I could tell that I had lost them. But of course, they had to be polite and they couldn't run me off the podium. So I continued. And I continued and I continued. And the more I went and the more I emphasized apart from works of law, they were starting to fidget. They were looking for rocks, any kind of hard object that they could hurl at me. And I knew it. I knew this was happening because, again, I had studied their point of view. I had gotten all the Israel identity material. I had studied the Destiny Publishers out of Merrimack, Massachusetts. I knew all about it. I listened to Ray Prenzing. I listened to even Stephen E. Jones. I listened to Paul Mueller. See, I got an education in all this stuff. This is why I feel like I have an authority to talk on this, because I know both sides of it. And the Worldwide Church of God people, they have an authority on it because they know both sides of it. A lot of you out of the Worldwide Church of God, you went through that whole law thing. So you understand the laws. You understand how they look at things. These law-based groups, these Israel-based groups. Again, I have no problem with them except when they want to try to mix Paul into it. But this group at the Restoration Bible Church under Jory Brooks was pretty good. Pretty good, because they didn't mix Paul. They were pretty good at keeping Paul the hell out. Of course, we had to reference Paul once in a while, Dean Huff and I. I think Tony Nungesser spoke at that church too. Could be wrong, but I think he did. We had to go light on Paul. But of course, you have to bring up Paul on the Salvation of All because he's the only guy that teaches it. Some people think that it's all over the Bible. Salvation of all talks about in the Psalm, talked about. Not really, no. You can only prove it out of Paul. Anyway, I finished my talk. And I knew that, well, that's the last time I'll ever see the inside of this church, and it was. But something amazing happened after my talk. I was sitting there dabbing the beads of sweat from my brow. I'm going to get this talk to you. It exists somewhere. I think it's in a storage unit in Canton, Ohio right now. I'm going to get it to Rodney Paris, who will digitize it, and I'll get it to you. And then I'll tell this story all over again because I never get tired of it, because this is first century drama, as you're about to hear. I close my Bible, getting ready to, you know, kind of like sneak out the back door, and out of the corner of my eye, I see this woman approaching me. I said, oh God, here it comes. Here it comes. She's coming up with purpose. Everybody else is like, it usually was, after I would talk, they would come up, hey, great job, Zender, slap my back, shake my hand, and hug me, and like, let's go out for steak. It was great, wonderful. They would all do that. But this time, nobody came up to me. They avoided me. All avoided me. They were all useless. They were all gone out of the way. Not one of them was righteous. No, not one. Only me. So, here comes this woman coming up. I'm thinking, oh, here it comes. Going to lower the boom. So this woman comes up, very pleasant looking woman. Not young, but not old. Very pleasant. Doesn't matter how old she was. But anyway, she comes up to me and she says, I just want you to know. I'm like, oh boy. She said, she's very sincere, almost had tears in her eyes. I'll never forget this. She said, I just want you to know that I heard my gospel today for the first time. Explosion of first century proportions. Why do I say that? Because just like in the first century, today, both evangels are able to be believed. I'm not saying the circumcision gospel is on the front burner. It's on the back burner, but it's still able to be believed, able to be held to, waited for. And this woman, she said, I have sat in this church. I forget how long it was. I'm just going to say, I sat in this church for a year. And every single Sunday, I hear about Israel, Israel, Israel. And something just seems wrong to me, but I don't know what it is. And they come to me from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They come to me out of James. But she never had any Jamesgasms because she just didn't get it. Something was wrong. She didn't lock into it. She didn't connect. Now this freak comes up from Ohio. For some reason, she wasn't there the other days I was there. But this day, I don't know if she couldn't be there, but it just worked out. Here she was. The day that I've determined is going to be my last day because I'm going to teach on justification by faith. And I threw in some other stuff from Paul's gospel. She is sitting there, little do I know, during my talk, mesmerized. Because listen, God had given her an antenna to pick up the FM station. In my analogy, the gospel of the uncircumcision is an FM broadcast. 100.9 FM. And the circumcision gospel is AM, 1100 AM. 1100 versus whatever I just said, 100.9, whatever I just said, FM and AM. She has an antenna for Paul's gospel, but she never hears it. But the antenna's there. She has it. It's been implanted in her by God from the day of her birth. She's been designated beforehand for membership in the body of Christ. None of these other people were, but they ever given an antenna for the circumcision gospel. They picked it up, and it was broadcast every Sunday. The airwaves were filled with 1100 a.m. 1100 a.m. All day, all the time. And they all had the antenna for it. This woman, named Deborah, was not given the antenna for the circumcision gospel. Can't pick up 1100 a.m. Can't. Doesn't have the antenna for it. Something's not right. She sits there every Sunday like, what's wrong? Then one day, some guy comes in, and for the first time in her life, This guy is broadcasting on 100.9 FM. That is the uncircumcision gospel, the grace of God. And for the first time, her antenna is going, there it is. There it is. Because I'm broadcasting the pure frequency. That's the frequency, 100.9. It's nothing else. It's not 100.7. It's not 102.6. It's 100.9. That is the frequency. She has an antenna tuned to that precise frequency. Never heard it. Never heard it. Some guy comes in. I'm just the messenger, but I have the frequency. I have the message. It's a pure message. I broadcast it. She gets it. She walks up to me, tears in her eyes. I heard my gospel for the first time today. She never went back to that church. Never went back. And now, 25 years later, she still supports this work. I still get emails from her. It's beautiful, beautiful thing. She sends me cards. She's never, ever forgotten it. And neither have I. It was first century drama. This is how it happened in the first century. You got two gospels going out simultaneously. Some people are wired to hear this one. Some people are wired to hear that one. Peter's wired to hear the circumcision, obviously. 1100 AM for him his whole life. And again, as I said, before Paul, there was no other frequency. There was only one. If you didn't have an 1100 receiver, you never got anything. But some people were born with this 100.9, but they never hear the frequency because there is no frequency. Nobody's built a station. There's no such thing as an FM signal until the glorified Christ calls Paul on the road to Damascus. And now for the first time, this 100.9 FM. FM. Nobody had ever heard of that. FM. What is FM? It's wild. But there's people on the earth who have the antenna for it. They're on the earth. Now, Paul was a rare guy. He had both antenna. He had both antenna. Peter didn't. Peter only had a receiver to pick up 1100. He hears Paul's message and he doesn't get it. He has no receiver for it. But he comes to realize that God's with Paul. Because God gave him a supernatural revelation to accept Paul. So he knows Paul's of God. He gives him the right hand of fellowship, but he doesn't get his thing. Paul is one of these rare people, and there are other Jews like this in that day that had both receivers. They had both antennas. And when the circumcision was around, they got it. But they also had an antenna for 100.9 FM. And as soon as that frequency began to be broadcast and was a miracle, they picked it up. They picked it up, and it was like rock and roll. Before, they were listening like to Frank Sinatra. Yeah, New York, New York, whatever. They're listening to this old-fashioned or talk radio, Frank Sinatra, the Everly Brothers, whatever, on 1100 AM. Now, all of a sudden, they're picking up Led Zeppelin. They're picking up the Beatles. They're picking up Frank Zappa. They're picking up Meatloaf. They're picking up all this stuff on FM. It's like, this is my news. This is my music. This is my gospel. I love this, and they gravitate to it, and you can't go back. You can't go back to the Everly Brothers once you've heard Stairway to Heaven. You can't. You can't.